From the Roots Up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. Today on the program, we will be talking once again to Zafar Bangash. It'll be later in the show, about half past. There's been developments, quite dramatic and worrisome, I would call it, in Bangladesh. And in past previous interviews, Zafar has discussed the issue of Bangladesh and the development of, you know, this tragic story in that part of Asia where there was once Pakistan, or East-West Pakistan, and the East became eventually Bangladesh. That's a very important part of the history that is affecting us right now, and so we're going to explore that with Zafar. I want to make sure we announce that we have the grand prize winners from our last fundraising at CIUT, and they are Alisa Carley, Everyday Easy Haul Electric Cargo Bike. That really sounds exotic. Everyday Easy Haul Electric Cargo Bike. And David Hubend, Everyday Easy, Ever Easy Electric Cargo Bike. So congratulations to David Hubend and Alisa Carley. This is, again, as I say, the Taylor Report. I'll tell you some of the things I want to be asking Zafar about. I've been looking into the news, and it troubles me, I guess, gets my attention, that the way the press is reporting the new leadership in Bangladesh is to say Nobel Prize winner, Peace Prize winner, is now going to be they don't say the boss or governor, they say he's the advisor to the military. And the way he won the Nobel Prize was that he was championed by Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton promoted him tirelessly. The United States gave Mr. Yunus, Muhammad Yunus, a Presidential Freedom Award. And they do that periodically to people that they then expect to help them out, or to make sure that they echo U.S. opinion. So I found that interesting. He also spent much of his time in the United States. His home base was Nashville. He was educated in, he was Camden, New Jersey. He's a Boy Scout, I mean, our kind. He was from the age of 10. He was an active Boy Scout. He used to go to the Valley Forge for the big occasions that the Boy Scouts have. Interesting background. The notion that he's associated with is that of microeconomics. And Hillary Clinton was a great champion of this. And the idea was that of a bank that gave loans, easily repaid loans, I guess, to entrepreneurs, small entrepreneurs, but primarily women. And it was kind of a badge that Hillary would wear to show that this is really something close to her heart. So if you like Bill Clinton and Hillary, I guess you'll have a soft spot for Mr. Yunus. He had been charged by the government, which has been removed in some recent years, with type of corruption. And I noticed something interesting since we're now, everybody thinks we're on the road to clean and better politics, and we're going to have a guy who's, he's just an economist who lived in the West and was given a Presidential Medal of Freedom, that he's been living in, I think, London, and he was cleared of charges. So if you have a court and you have all the necessary, you have the police, you have the investigators, you have they represent the government, and you have all these are always identified as, in every country, by the way, I'm not talking about any particular one, as independent bodies that carry out a function. But apparently, all it took was a stroke of a pen, and the charges went away for him in the past 48 hours. So why wouldn't they at least put up the appearance of looking into, saying, okay, we're going to, in light of the problems with the government, we're going to review it and take it in front of the various bodies in the courts and see what they can do. But they just did it. To me, that's corrupt. I'm not saying I know anything at all about the previous regime, except that it was elected, and it had always been. I do know that the Awami League, which is the People's Party of Bangladesh, historically has been a popular party. Whether or not this person who was the prime minister was particularly bad or whatever, the party is quite a historically important phenomenon of Bangladeshi history. And they came into being in the struggle to create the country of Bangladesh. So it's the fact that obviously they were electable. They had opposing parties who also, by the way, are strong. It's more than one party in the country, and they're strong parties. So, okay, you have the instance of one where they, because of a series of demonstrations and decisions of the military, you removed the prime minister. But to just say overnight that we've decided to remove also the charges against an individual is, to me, it's saying you don't like corruption except that you're corrupt. Why not let it go through something resembling a democratic, the ordinary processes of courts? Are they saying everybody who's in jail now in Bangladesh for any charge are there because they were a result of a bad prime minister, and therefore everybody should be out? I doubt that they're saying that. I'll bet they have a lot of people, what we call white-collar criminals, who are locked up because the court said they should be. Anyway, that's just part of the problem, in my opinion. Now, the prime minister, here's something we're going to be asking Zafa. The prime minister, who has now fled the country, she's in India, has made a very important, or more, I'd say, serious accusation. Her name is Sheikh Hasina. She says that the United States engineered her removal. And that they did it, she said, because they wanted St. Martin's Island, the island of St. Martin's, for military purposes. Now, I don't know whether that's true, but we do know, because President Obama told us so, that they were going to be pivoting to Asia, and the U.S. has been in every corner of that part of the world. They have been moving in military assets and creating alliances. Most recent one that they're working very hard on is South Korea, Japan, and the Philippines, together with China, part of China called Taiwan, which belongs to China. And wherever they go, they add an aircraft carrier or submarines or allied military drills. And they are particularly interested in an area called the Strait of Malacca. And according to the departed Prime Minister, Sheikh Hasina, they want to control the Bay of United States, wants to be there, be a presence in the Bay of Bengal. And that's an accusation that should be very closely examined, because it's only logical. The U.S. has been saying, and it out of the mouth of Joe Biden, he said, we're going to check China. We're going to block them. They're not going to be permitted, he said. Not going to be permitted to surpass the United States. They cannot surpass, so we're going to make sure they don't. Well, that's pure aggression. If to say it's in a zone of trade or that kind of thing, it's actually a prelude to war. And don't take it, as they say, from me. Just read your newspapers. Just read the Star Globe and follow American media but more importantly, the governments of France, United Kingdom, and the United States. They all are concerned that China is developing. The great crime, the unspeakable crime that China is guilty of, is developing. Because those who run the Western, and it is a Western-based empire, and they've never quit on the idea, they recall when they used to be able to control downtown Shanghai, and they had signs in their area, and the sign said, no dogs or Chinese allowed, so that they didn't have to be seeing the people of the country that they were walking all over and robbing. And, of course, the Japanese later took it to the extreme and brought their armies and actually to fight the Western so that Japan could have an empire. They basically tried to destroy China. China survived and has returned to being what it always has been, a central power of Asia. And we're deeply involved in all this. And we're just what they call knee-jerk opportunists. Whatever the United States says is gospel. And so we go along. But there's been a phenomena, I'm sure listeners are aware, of the Belt and Road Project. And the Belt and Road Project has now includes many, many countries, and it is bringing good trade, good relations, and economic development. China's project is not only for themselves to develop from recovery from aggressive colonialism, but for others to do so as well. They have what you could call it a southern strategy, which based on the fact that they are developing countries, victims of colonialism, who are trying to find their place once again in the world without being under the direct boot of a Western power. So the Belt and Road has been developing and is a success. Bangladesh is a part of that. and a neighbor, its closest neighbor to the east is Myanmar. And the United States and France and others have targeted Myanmar. They call it Burma, by the way, because they prefer to do that. It's part of their way of showing developing world, who's boss? They here, it's considered just, you know, fine, and you can call it Burma. It's not Burma, it's Myanmar. And recently, the reports prior to the removal of this government in Bangladesh, the reports were actually enthusiastic news coming through the Globe and Reuters and others that Myanmar is being broken up by armed groups. Those armed groups have Western supporters. Their target, their goal is to prevent China from developing the Belt and Road with a through both Myanmar and Bangladesh. And I take you back to Joe Biden. Joe Biden says, not going to happen. And he boasts about it. So when he, for example, if you remember the marvelous debate between Biden and Trump, where Trump talked and Biden tried to remember what he was trying to say. Biden's big, he did manage to say several times that he's the one who put a stop to China. He said that when I took office, people were talking about China's going to become number one. He says, won't happen. Didn't happen and won't happen, and it's because of the marvelous liberal Democrats of the United States using every means available. And I'll remind you, they have a perfectly sound reason that they're doing this. It's because they are exceptional. As Obama told students at West Point, I believe in American exceptionalism in every fiber of my being. American exceptionalism. Why doesn't somebody ask the Prime Minister, do you believe in American exceptionalism? It'd be nice just to hear, because he by saying you do, you would be announcing that you are chopped liver, that they are exceptional. The other term they use is they're indispensable. So since they're indispensable, and because they're exceptional, neither term having anything at all to do with the Charter of the United Nations or international law, et cetera, it simply says, we'll do what we want. And that's part of the joy of being an empire. And it's no fun unless you're crushing somebody just to prove it. And that's the basis on which they have been putting their ships and warplanes into the South China Sea and into Asia. Another flashpoint is, if you want to follow this, every other day now, the Philippines is being prodded by the U.S. to see if they can cause a real conflagration. There are always, between all states, there are always, particularly states Pacific Atlantic, there's always islands and areas that are claimed by one and not recognized by another, which is means, you know, you could have a problem. So there is, in Philippines, there are islands in the region which are claimed by both parties. And there's a protocol for how to deal with it, which is to take it to there are bodies to resolve these things, to prevent a conflict. But recently, under U.S. tutelage, there's been a process of urging Philippines to put its military into areas that have previously been under undisputed Chinese attention or authority. So there was a trick of putting a Philippine ship on one of the islands, having its land it was grounded, basically ran into the shore. Then they said, oh, we have to look after it. So the Chinese said, no, remove the ship. And the Philippines said, no, well, we have to just supply it. And they said, no, remove it. So now warplanes are buzzing each other. See, this is very dangerous, and the Americans are behind it. Under Duterte, the Philippines had a policy of friendliness towards China, and he's given an interview. By the way, he's the most popular politician in modern Philippine history. He couldn't run for the third term, but had he run, he would have won. And he has been saying the people who took over are following American diktat. And he was opposed to that, which is one of the reasons he was the most popular Philippine leader in modern times. Just if you don't know this, as late as 1935, the American Congress was thinking about making the Philippines a U.S. state. And they decided to give up on the idea. The Philippines were Catholic and spoke a wrong language. So, but they thought, well, why not? They were debating it. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. In about 10 minutes, we're going to be talking with Zafar Banks. I think we have a little bit of flattened Scruggs, and we'll come back with a few more items from the news. There you go. That's flattened Scruggs. One of them was always flat. Scruggs, by the way, just to remind everybody, was it joined the anti-war movement again and over Vietnam, and that was the end of flattened Scruggs. Before that, they were just two country boys. But the son, I believe, of Scruggs, I can't think of his first name, said, "Hey, Dad, this is terrible. What's going on?" And his dad agreed. So Scruggs' family kept up their part of the music business. But just a little detail. I saw something which I want to make sure everybody who listens to this program hears. As you know, the Taylor Report, I've had many guests here who are involved with the subject of Rwanda, the International Criminal Tribunal, which was a precursor to the current ICC. It was, you might say, it was a dry run to see if they could make it go, to give it a kind of UN veneer, and then they could use it to make the ICC to prosecute Africans, basically. That's who they do prosecute, Africans. Oh, I mentioned Duterte a while ago. They did go after Duterte to the point where the Philippines said, you better stop doing that because we're going to pretend we're as important as the Americans and we will tell you to get out of our country. And there was also the tribunal for Yugoslavia. And so we learned that the United States at that time was able to help this come into being. Of course, the United States, by the way, didn't recognize it because they said we're exceptional. It was only for people in Africa. So they began to prosecute African leaders frequently. And by the way, I'm not playing. I mean, they held Mr. Gbagbo for almost, 9 years, something like that. And then they acquitted him. So it's a sick story. But there are people in the West who say, we should send Netanyahu or we should do this and that to the ICC. Forget it. It's never going to happen. What's going to happen is that they will prosecute, as they already said, if they investigate, it's going to be Mr. Netanyahu and Mr. Sinwar, and there'll be more people associated with the Palestinians who will be prosecuted. And there will never be a conclusion. It's really just a pouring money down a rat hole, and Western lawyers and judges put on their robes and sit around The Hague and get perfectly useless. This isn't said often enough. There is a real court, International Court of Justice. It's actually real. That was created by the United Nations, applies to everybody. And recently we had an exercise at the International Court of Justice where South Africa brought the charge of war crimes and genocide against Israel at that court, and major states participated. So it's not a play-like court, it's a real thing. And it was established properly by the UN where a state has to bring the action against another state. It's not a concoction that names an individual in a state. No, that's a joke. That's imperialism. Well, anyway, all this is leading to me to want to quote this from a Russian representative at the UN. Her name is Evstigneva. This is what she said. The ICC, again, it is not the ICJ. She's talking about the ICC, has nothing to do with justice. Its only good is to carry out, its only goal is to carry out the political orders of its masters. Thus, it only exacerbates the situation or even serves as a battering ram for regime change, as was the case in Libya. I'm really glad she said that, because that's what you call a foundational statement. She made it very clear that the ICC is a political instrument controlled by the West. And unfortunately, there are, you know, well, we live in the West, so people are very susceptible to propaganda. And they, I think actually in their minds, they confuse the two things. They confuse the International Court of Justice, which is a real thing, with the ICC, which is a cobbled together concoction in which the US and UK were the main movers, though neither of them ever understood that to involve them other than as masters. They would never be charged by the ICC. And so that's, it's just something to know. I'm glad we were able to bring it to listeners' attention.